Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, focused on applying Mazda's customer-centric approach for vehicle design to car buying and servicing in order to create an experience centered around the customer. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. Mecklenburg County Sheriff Gary McFadden has been a controversial figure for several reasons, among them the rocky relationship he and other Democratic sheriffs have had with immigration and customs enforcement. That friction ultimately led to a new law being passed in North Carolina requiring sheriffs to work with ICE in detaining individuals of interest beyond their normal release date. McFadden has always contended that he has worked with ICE to the letter of the law. Well, now that law has changed, and we wanted to talk to him about what this means for him, his department, and how detainees who might be of interest to ICE are treated. Gary McFadden, welcome back, and let me start with a question about news that came down late yesterday afternoon. It was reported that Dan Gregory Bovino, the top Border Patrol official who is leading the charge in the Trump administration's crackdown on immigration, will be leaving Chicago, possibly by the end of the week. And rumors are, from the New York Times and CBS News, that he's expected to head to Charlotte and to New Orleans. You're in local law enforcement. What else can you tell us about that?
We can't tell you anything. We have not been contacted by anybody from that division. Chief Jennings and I spoke early yesterday morning about 11 o'clock, and he asked me, have I been contacted? Because he wasn't contacted. So the two largest agencies in the region have not been contacted. So we have no information for you.
Would it be normal if they were to come into town for them to contact either CMPD or the sheriff's department or both?
Well, it would be better for safety reasons. We all know that people come and operate within the jurisdictions of Mecklenburg County. It would be a good thing. We don't want to interrupt anything that they are doing. We don't have any problems with that. But, you know, when you're operating and people don't know who you are, especially Border Patrol, this is something uncommon. People wouldn't know what a Border Patrolman looks like with the green uniform, which says Border Control. That is confusing. And so we just want it for safety reasons, because if we have to respond, at least we know who we're responding to and who we are assisting.
So I think it was last week or the week before last, three representatives in Congress from North Carolina were requested the National Guard come to Charlotte. The Mecklenburg County Fraternal Order of Police has requested or recommended that the National Guard come to Charlotte. This would not be the National Guard. This would be Border Patrol. But in your opinion, do we need federal help or National Guard help of any kind here?
We need federal money. We need federal funding. Our city is no different than anybody else's city. Chicago, Florida, Miami, Houston. And so, of course, it's political season, and they do things in a political manner. But you would think that they would contact the local law enforcement officers and have that conversation. We all know this is political. And so, you know, it's the thing that they do. We have not had a conversation with Fraternal Order of Police, and those three guys in Raleigh has never been to my office.
So they haven't. They're not talking about this at the federal level. They're not telling anybody anything. They haven't contacted you. They haven't contacted CMPD. Although CBS News and the New York Times are both reporting that in Chicago they've been conducting what they call Operation Midway Blitz, and here they already have a name for it: Charlotte Web. In Chicago, those operations there have been marked by mass arrests and neighborhood sweeps and clashes with protesters. They've used tear gas and pepper balls. One member of the clergy there was shot with a pepper ball. Operations there have also resulted in judicial restrictions on the use of force. With that as prologue, what would a Charlotte Web operation likely entail? What would it look like?
Well, I hope it would entail cooperation with the local law enforcement, coordination, at least communication. We all know history may repeat itself. Charlotte has a reputation called the Charlotte Hornets. And so we don't want that to happen again. But local law enforcement and politicians need to understand this. We're not going to stand in the way. But if you need our assistance, we do need to know who we are coming to assist and why. And so I think it's not wise to operate in a jurisdiction without speaking to local law enforcement. And no, we know we're going to get some feedback from that. But I think it's just a courteous thing to do. Because when we're responding to assist, we want to know who we are assisting. Charlotte Webbs is a catchy phrase, which is great. I hope they don't get tangled up in the spider webs.
So when Border Patrol comes to an area, what in the past, they haven't done this in the past. They've stayed at the border. But when they go to places like Chicago, what are they doing? Are they involved in protecting federal buildings? Are they rounding up individuals they suspect of being in the country illegally? What are they doing?
We don't know. We can just say that we are just like everyone else. We watch the news. We see what goes on. And we don't have any paperwork, process, procedures that say this is how they're operating. So we don't know. We're just like the general public. We're watching CNN, watching the news networks, and watching what's happening in all these cities with Border Patrol.
So the administration is clearly targeting blue cities. Charlotte is a blue city. Chicago is a blue city. San Francisco is a blue city. Oregon, Portland is a blue city. And you have had some problems, some difficulties, some disagreements, let's put it that way, with ICE. And we live in this blue city. And we've spoken on previous programs about your relationship with ICE. Just to review, one of your first official acts as sheriffs was to end cooperation with 287G. And both you and then CMPD Chief Kerr Putney believed that participation in that program made this region less safe because it raised suspicions of law enforcement in the immigrant community, which in turn made them less likely to report crimes to the police. You were joined by six other urban area sheriffs in the state in that resistance. And at the time, you said you were not cooperating, that not cooperating would build trust in the immigrant community. But you also said that ICE needed to come to you with criminal warrants in order to have you legally hold detainees in jail. You instead were following state law at the time by releasing detainees without notifying ICE. Then HB 10 went into effect. This is very complicated. What changed with HB? What changed with HB 10?
Well, the lawmakers in Raleigh, without speaking to the local sheriff, created HB 10, where we would actually hold people for 48 hours. We can actually tell you HB 10 was a disaster. We've held over 300 people on detainers, and ICE did not have the capability or did not choose to take any of those 300. So all the people that we held, they never came to pick them up. Now, the new House bill, 317, I believe, so 18. Many bills, you know.
318, 317,
you know, one of the teens. So 318 made it so that we would now cooperate. We would now notify ICE within the first 48 hours to come and pick them up. As you said, having collaboration, cooperation, and what you said is communication was better. So after we had this communication, after some incidents across America, I had a nice meeting with ICE here in my office, and our relationship is working better. But I must stress to the people, it is not that we are assisting with enforcement. Right. We are assisting where we are collaborating better with better communication.
So let's go through this new House bill, this which is now law. In May, House Bill 318, yes. The Cooperation with ICE Expansion Law passed over Governor Josh Stein's veto. It went into effect at the beginning of October, and it expands mandatory immigration status checks on all detainees accused of felony charges and select misdemeanors, and delays the start of the so-called 48-hour ICE detainer hold, which potentially increases detention time for these people. Remind us how this whole time worked prior to the passage of this law and why the legislature felt that this mandate was needed to secure the cooperation of you and other sheriffs.
Well, HB 10 didn't give us the legal right through a law to continue to hold them. And so what we did is actually notified ICE on all of these holds, but they didn't pick them up because there was no law to allow them to pick them up in what we call a writ. So then when we brought that to the lawmakers' attention, they decided to say, I found a loophole. No, I found a misstep that the lawmakers did not think about, which is also some others. So when we found that misstep, they went back, made it law that we contact ICE when a person is going to be released within the first 48 hours. So the new law, 318, we now contact ICE again. Everything is the same. We also did the background checks. We never not did the background checks. We always did everything that these both bill created. It's just that we could not turn someone over to ICE without legal documentation signed by a judge. So now the law says you have to contact ICE, which we do. The first 48 hours, we contact them 2 hours within the first 48 hours to say you need to come and pick this person up. And they do come and pick those which they choose to pick up. So in the first 48 hours in that hole, the first 2 hours, we contact ICE. ICE comes down and picks them up. The other issue is this, that we haven't quite figured out in Raleigh, which is not our issue, is when they do pick these people up that have pending state charges and they go into deportation, they will be acceptable. Well, there will be likelihood they will be called to court, which we have examples, and they don't show up for court. An order for their arrest will be issued. And so we have people now in detention, possibly deportation, that have not appeared in court. The state judges don't know that. And so they're going to issue their order for arrest. We have a perfect example of a young man named Joe Serino. He went in ICE deportation, and now they are outstanding order for his arrest.
Lot to unpack with this.
Lots to unpack.
Under this new law, if an undocumented individual is charged with a felony in certain sexual offenses or a DWI, you have to contact ICE. Is that to say that if an undocumented individual comes into your custody as a result of a lesser charge, that you do not have to contact ICE?
No. Our procedure has been since I came to office, and this is the misconception that people had. There is a questionnaire with the first three questions determine your citizenship on every single person that is arrested in Mecklenburg County. So people, as we call it, word salad this thing to fit their agenda. Every single person, we ask about your citizenship. And when we can't determine your citizenship, every single person is submitted to ICE from the very first day that I walked into office. That has never changed. And so now ICE has the ability to send a criminal warrant or a administrative warrant. And so the detainers are administrative warrant. They still do that. The only difference now is that we hold them for the 48 hours and ICE comes to pick them up. There is no difference in whether they're charged with a trespassing, whether they charged with a DWI, whether they charged with a felony. From day one, the Mecklenburg County Sheriff's Office contacted ICE on every single undocumented person that we came in contact with because we could not determine their citizenship.
Under the old law, evidently, and it was not particular to Mecklenburg County, it was happening in other counties as well, when ICE was contacted that you had somebody in your custody that perhaps they would be interested in, they didn't always come and pick them up.
Correct.
Has that changed under 318? Are they coming to pick them up now?
They are coming to pick them up much more frequently now than past. They have been coming more frequently.
And when they pick them up, they now have a warrant. So, as you mentioned, when they come and pick them up,
They don't have a warrant. That is, the House bill created a law. So that's what the confusion is. As you say, it's very complex. And we are given, sometimes media gives part of it, but not clarity. They still do not have a criminal warrant. They're just coming to pick them up because of the law. Bill has been passed in HB 318.
So without a warrant, you're turning these people over. What do they then do with them? Do they send them through the court system or do they put them on an airplane?
They do not come through the state court system. We do not know what they do with them after they leave the Mecklenburg County Detention Center.
So critics of this law have said it is unconstitutional because it applies to people who have been accused, not convicted of a crime, which forces sheriffs to hold them longer than they otherwise would be allowed to under the law. And in the past, it was it was your adherence to the letter of the law that caused consternation about ICE and resulted in the passage of this law. Not just you, but other sheriffs resisted this. Federal law and the Constitution trumps state law, no pun intended. So do you believe this law is unconstitutional? And if so, why are you complying with it, given the fact that you are a stickler when it comes to the law?
Well, it is law now, and that's what people misconstrued. HB 318 became a law.
Yes, but it's state law. Sheriff, it's state law.
It's state law. So we have to go.
Go ahead.
Again, I'm following state law because I'm not a federal officer. So I'm following what the state law requires me to do and not the federal law.
But, sir, I could be wrong about this. The Constitution's Fifth Amendment says, I'm not wrong about this, that it guarantees all persons, not citizens, not everybody in the country, the right to due process of law. If you're turning these people over to ICE and they are not putting them through the court system, that's a violation of their rights under the Constitution. Is that not something that you should be adhering to?
Well, we're just adhering to the state law. As we said, we have been fighting this from day one. And they're coming to pick the people up because the lawmakers in Raleigh decided to make it state law. And we understand the federal law. But now we are having to go under state law. Now, if somebody comes to me and said, well, you're not doing the right things in federal law, then we will listen to that and fight that.
But you are a representative of the law. Should you not be following the Constitution?
I'm following the state law and the Constitution.
Possibly. Okay, we have to take a break. Sheriff Gary McFadden is here. This is very, very confusing, but we'll talk more about that and other things with Mecklenburg County Sheriff Gary McFadden when we come back at Charlotte Talks on WFAE.
Support comes from WFAE listeners and Habitat Charlotte Region. Since 1983, Habitat Charlotte Region has partnered with more than 5,000 families through financial education, homeownership, and critical home repair. More information at habitatcharlotteregion.org.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking this morning with Mecklenburg County Sheriff Gary McFadden, particularly about things revolving around ICE and the new HB 318, which became law in May and went into effect in October. And it requires sheriffs around the state to contact ICE and hold these prisoners that they or these detainees for 48 extra hours as ICE decides what to do about coming to get them or not. After the passage of this bill and in the shadow of HB 10, you met with representatives from ICE to talk about protocols for how they would conduct themselves in your jail and at other county facilities. What did you ask them to do or not do?
Well, let me go back. Why we asked them to do what we and not to do. When I was in Texas with the National Sheriff Association, with the National Major County Sheriffs of America, having our annual meeting, we were talking about the cooperation with ICE. And if you remember that in Texas, they had a shooting at a, I guess, like for a better word, a detention center where two people were killed. Then you remember ICE agents or someone actually shot some U.S. Marshals. So when you look at all this craziness that's going on with these cities who they said that would make the city safer, it became more violent. It became more frequent. And so after what we classified as the duck pond incident where, you know, ICE officers wrestled the guy at Marshall Park, I decided to send ICE a letter. Now, I've been sending them the letters for quite some time, and I sent them one in May, hoping that they would respond. But when I sent it October 1st, and I sent it to the regional office, which contains North Carolina, South Carolina, and Georgia, they listened. And so we had a very productive meeting here at my office to say, this is what you can do, should do, and we hopefully do within the jurisdictions of the Mecklenburg County, the jail and detention center. So what we tell them to do, operate efficiency and help allow us to help you. And what we mean, here are some guidelines to make this thing safer.
Do they have to comply with your request, and have they complied?
They did not have to comply with my request, but they did reply with my request, and we are working much better than we have in the past 7 years. Again, we're not helping them with enforcement. Don't want anybody to get that screwed up. We are not assisting them with enforcement. We are assisting them with safety, humanity, and that's what we want.
Some of the individuals being rounded up by ICE around the country are simply being scooped up on suspicion of being in the country illegally. Some of them have proven to be documented immigrants with a legal right to be here. Others have proven to be U.S. citizens who just happened to be at the wrong place at the wrong time and looked like somebody who might be an immigrant. They were essentially racially profiled. How many of the people detained in your jails at the behest of ICE have been accused of or charged with a crime versus just being scooped up on suspicion?
No, the people in the Mecklenburg County jail or detention center were brought in by local law enforcement officers with local, state, and maybe federal charges that were generated by the local law enforcement. So these are not people that I scooped up and brought to our facility. These are people who were already housed in our facility on state and or federal charges. So none of these people in my detention center were scooped up by the ICE and brought here and ICE removed them. That is not how it works. You have to have criminal charges, state or federal, to be housed in my facility. And then if ICE wants to come and pick them up under 318, then they can.
So for people who don't know your background, you've spent your lifetime in law enforcement, essentially your professional lifetime, and you were with CMPD for over a decade prior to becoming Mecklenburg County Sheriff. You are now in your second term in that job. And one of the reasons for the passage of 318 was because you and other Democratic sheriffs were sticklers to the law, to the letter of the law with regard to the bill that preceded that, that prescribed how you should act with ICE. So they had to change the law because you were adhering to the letter of the law. Yesterday, we had a former immigration court judge on this program who had been fired by the Trump administration. He alleges that the administration is riding roughshod over the rule of law. He alleged that the rule of law and judges are under attack. And just this week, another federal judge, Mark Wolf, resigned just so he could speak out against what he sees as the dismantling of the rule of law. This is all part and parcel of what we're going through here right now. What's your take on this?
Well, it is. It is some of his rough shot. It is being targeted. I can tell you that I've been targeted 30 minutes after I came to office. And let's make no mistake about it. You know, the Democratic sheriffs are all black sheriffs. So let's not overlook that. And that has also been targeted because you hear the lawmakers in Raleigh say the woke sheriffs and the supermajority minority sheriffs. And so we know that we some of us are being targeted. Let's make no doubt about it. We are being targeted. And that's who they voted in to be whoever he is at this point, the president. And so we expect these things. He's not shameful. He's not hiding behind it. He's doing it openly of what he needs to do. And he has an agenda. Nobody was prepared for it. Nobody know how to respond to it. And simply it's confusing. And so at this point, we are just following the law as best that we know how. And that's what we're going to do.
Well, that's why I was pressing you so hard before the break on state law versus constitutional law. I mean, what can a sheriff or other law enforcement officer do when they believe that the federal government is ignoring the Constitution? When a state law appears to be in conflict with the Constitution, what should they do? What should you do?
What I said from the very beginning, bipartisan, we use that word when we want to. Meetings and agendas, we use those words when we want to. In the beginning, everybody should have came. We should have been brought to the table, especially the American sheriffs, Democrat and Republican, you know, left and right should all come to the table and said, none of this is working. It is not being creating safer cities. Every city that they have went into, there has been some violence. And so this is something that we expect. And so, again, we should have come to the table and said, this is out of hand. This is overboard. But nobody's going to say that. Everybody's still going to plow the field and hope that they can harvest the crops. But this is going to continue until someone is truly hurt and something really just going overboard. But following the law the best that we can, is that what we're doing? And we know we go back, are you following the Constitution? Are you following the law? We're following the only thing that we have to hold on to. When they pass a bill, I'll follow that. Somebody challenges that we're not doing it on a federal level, then we go back to the books and we fight again.
According to what we could find, according to the Mecklenburg County Sheriff's Office, by October 31st, over 30 immigrants had been picked up by ICE and housed at the Mecklenburg County Jail under this new state law. As of this morning, November the 12th, where does that number stand?
When you say picked up by ICE and brought here?
Or picked up by law enforcement and being held for ICE. There were 31.
So we picked them up and hold them for ICE, and then ICE takes them out of the building.
Okay.
The last number I saw was 46.
Okay. Does this represent an escalation in the number of immigrants being picked up and detained, or is this just normal course of action?
No, it is definitely an escalation of people who are undocumented being arrested on state charges or being picked up by ICE. Absolutely.
So as we detain more people, and as we detain them longer, because State Bill 318, House Bill 318, requires you to hold them for 48 hours longer than normal, what is this costing Mecklenburg County taxpayers? And is the federal government or the state government stepping in to cover some of those additional costs?
I'm glad that you asked that, because this is what I was saying the whole time. Not paying attention to what is going on, it is $398 per 48-hour state. So is the federal government reimbursing Mecklenburg County? No. Are we receiving any funding from the federal government regarding these detentions? No. This is something that I've always said, but if, of course, it's been mixed up into the word salad of other stuff, and this is the options that we are missing. option one, number one, Mecklenburg County will be paying for these that they did not understand. So $398 a stay for the first 48 hours. So when a person is eligible to be released, have met all the criteria to be released, that person is being held for an additional up to an additional 48 hours.
And I take it that the state government, which has mandated that you hold these individuals longer than normal, is also not kicking in extra money to pay for their expenses, correct?
Absolutely. The state lawmakers create these bills without having conversation with local law enforcement. They will tell you they're having conversation with North Carolina Sheriff Association. That's a representative of all the sheriffs in North Carolina, but it doesn't represent the views of the local sheriffs who have to suffer to hold these people, not only financially, but it's to put a burden on our staff to hold these additional people on top of, remember, House Bill 307 will become law December. That is another issue that we're going to deal with.
And what will that do?
That is going to look at, should we hold additional people because of mental health, because of the stabbing on the light rail. So our numbers for that alone, without the law going into effect December 18th, has drove our population up to 118 more people to be held inside the Mecklenburg County Detention Center.
So if I heard you correctly, and if I remember the figure correctly, I think you said $398 per 24-hour period for these individuals.
48 hours.
So $398, and the number of people being held has increased over time and is likely to continue to increase over time. This is a drain, obviously, on resources. Put that drain in some sort of context. Is it a lot? Is it a large drain? And what is the impact of that? What are you having to forego to be able to afford that?
Well, not only is it going to put an impact on us financially, mentally, it's going to put an impact on my staff. Something that nobody, the lawmakers or the federal government really realize. You know, when we're talking about a hiring practice and hiring additional officers, we have to train them. But we're bringing people in that are going to be subjected to people with mental illness more than we have in the past, and the capacity of our detention center is going to grow. So we're going to come up to the same thing that, you know, they talked about, staff versus the number of people here. Do we have the adequate number of staff to safely run a facility that is going to be overcrowded? We're going to run into that problem very soon.
But so what about monetary resources? Go ahead.
Well, somebody needs to think about that. Nobody thought about that. Let Mecklenburg County Detention Center house these people without any monetary input. And that is what we have been saying the whole time. But, you know, the 398 was kind of pushed to the side because we want to make cities safer. You heard the lawmaker say that. We're releasing people. No, I'm not releasing people. The judges order me to release these people. So not just solely on me. And let's get that straight. The sheriff doesn't have the ability to just let anyone out of the facility. That has to be orchestrated by a magistrate judge or a judge. When I receive a order, which is the law, to release a person, then I am supposed to release that person. But 318 says, wait a minute, we understand that law, but now our lawmakers made a new law to say you have to hold them for 48 hours. Simply not having these conversations is going to create a bigger crisis for us.
This is similar to your complaints over HB 10, which you had disagreements with, and you kind of alleged that no one is the left hand isn't talking to the right hand, and they're not taking all the ramifications into consideration. Is this anywhere to run an airline? I mean, why is this the way it's being done?
Well, the left hand is not talking to the right hand, but neither hand is talking to the head, and that would be the sheriffs. Because at the end, we are just warehousing these people. And then when we are warehousing them, it causes issues financially for Mecklenburg County, but it also brings mental health challenges for my staff. Because we are overcrowding our facility on HB 10, now HB 318, and nobody's talking about 307. 307 is going to be a nightmare. Because we're talking about, go ahead.
Do you have sufficient staff to handle this? Because one of the problems with closing the jail north, which was the youthful offender jail, was that there was insufficient staff, and evidently there is still insufficient staff to reopen that, which we don't have time to talk about. But do you have sufficient staff to handle what you're having to do now at the main jail?
No, we're not. And the reason why we don't, because we criticize law enforcement so much that people just don't want to work in law enforcement anymore. Spouses, husbands and wives said, why are you doing this? And you can work somewhere else. So when the agenda is always negative towards law enforcement, it kills our recruiting efforts. Although that we are doing good, we want to do much better because we can see the future of HB 318 and 307. But let me say this. The juvenile detention center was not closed because of the staffing at the juvenile detention center. Let me say that again. The staffing at the juvenile detention center was fine. The staffing at the main facility is what the state was talking about. But we also found out that the state inspector, let me make sure you understand this, the state inspector lied about the criteria, but nobody's holding them accountable. So they made up this agenda and they lied, and we all know it's political, and that is the reason that they closed the juvenile, the detention center. Because we had to take those resources and go to the central resources.
I wish we had more time to talk about that, and we intended to talk about that and other issues, but because of our technical difficulties at the start of the program, we are out of time. Sheriff Gary McFadden, thank you for the 45 minutes that we had together. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Charlotte Talks is a production of 90.7 WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from Mazda of South Charlotte. Our executive producer is Gabe Altieri. The senior producer is Sarah D'Elia. Our producer is Chris Jones. For more information about Charlotte Talks, to listen to past episodes, or to subscribe to the Charlotte Talks podcast, visit wfae.org/charlottetalks. Additional support for WFAE programming comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, a private corporation funded by the American people.
Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, focused on applying Mazda's customer-centric approach for vehicle design to car buying and servicing in order to create an experience centered around the customer. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com.